Hey, welcome to The Deadline. I'm Laura, your host and founder of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society. And of course, I'm here with Brian Sant, the NJGHS tech guru and producer of The Deadline. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
How are you?
It's another day.
Another day, another donut. So guess what?
What?
We have our location already secured to record our Halloween show.
Now, have you gone there?
I've been there in the past.
Now, is there an actual, like, good place for us to sit down and record?
Yes, because when I went there, Johnny Peso was playing there. And obviously they had to have a corner to fit an entire band, and there was an outlet so the band could plug in their amplifiers and microphones and what have you. So I explained to Susanna, who is one of the owners of the Town Tavern in Chatham.
Where Don't you we'll cry be. For me.
There you go. And I explained to her that we would need a table, we would have to be able to set up the computer, microphones, soundboard, what have you, and then maybe another table to put the prizes and, like, t-shirts and stuff on.
No, another table for the food.
That's afterwards.
So what?
Yeah, well, we're not going to be eating while we're talking on the show and talking to people, because that's rude. It's disgusting. Dude. No, so I told her, so I'll probably have a drink while we're doing the show. But
oh, no. You can't eat. You can't drink.
Well, I can have my water then.
You can have your water.
Mm. Well, when the show is done, we can party. But, I mean, so anyway, that does not preclude those of you NJGHSers and all you your deadline fans out there, all seven of you, to show up and, you know, join in the fun. This place, the Town Tavern, it's located at 34 River Road in Chatham, New Jersey, has awesome pub food, and they do a great job. It's got a nice bar, like, in the center, and so it's kind of, like, rectangular, so all the seats are around it, and then the tables are further out from around that, and there's a place where the band would be playing, and, you know, and it's haunted. How cool is that? Back in the 50s, one of the owners, I think she said her name was Rosa Rillo or Rose Rillo. She was behind the bar, dropped dead of a heart attack right then and there. And they say a lot of the bartenders to this day say they feel like every so often this inexplicable chill. They're nowhere near the ice machine or whatever, but all of a sudden they get this chill. And she said one night, and this was Susanna telling me this, one night they were, at 1:30 in the morning, the bar had closed down. She said they were just kind of sitting there around the bar, just kind of vegging. They were just winding down. They had closed everything up. And they heard someone walking up the back steps, which you'll see when you go there. You have to go up, for the ladies, unfortunately, it's a schlep. But you have to go up this winding staircase to get up to where the one restroom is for women. And they thought, wow, someone's still in there. And they went to look, and nobody was there. And nobody was upstairs. But they all heard these definite footsteps go up the stairs. So it's very cool. Like I said, the food is really good. In fact, I even have a $50 gift certificate for there.
So now that's why we're going there.
No, no. It occurred to me after she called me back and we were talking, and I was like, well, that's right. I bought a gift certificate off of WDHA, so I'll bring that with me so we can actually eat that night, Brian.
You bought one?
Yeah, they have a, every week, WDHA FM in New Jersey has a different restaurant that they highlight. And they only buy 100 of these special certificates, and once 100 of them are sold, that's it. But what the deal is, yeah, I think it's called Dining Deals through DHA, you get two $50 gift certificates. So that's $100 for 50 bucks, and then it's $5 for shipping and handling. Okay. So I got $100 worth of food for $55, and then that way I get to keep a $50 certificate, and then I'm going to give the other one to my parents for their anniversary gift.
Okay.
So that way they can go and get some good food right in their backyard and not have to travel.
And you're sure they're open, right?
Yes.
We're not going to drive there, and they're going to be closed.
No, because even when I spoke to Tony, the bartender, earlier today, he said, oh, I'll be, you know, I bartend on Wednesday, so that'll be good. I'll be here when you're doing the show. So he was psyched about it. He thought it was really cool. You know, they didn't really understand the whole concept of podcast. They thought it was a radio show. So I was trying to explain, well, no, it's not really radio. I mean, it can be on the radio as well, because some podcasts do get picked up like that. But ours is
not ours.
Not ours. This is strictly a podcast. But so we're also going to be doing a really good twist this year for our Halloween show. It's going to be centered on dead songs. Now, obviously, we'll throw in some Halloween favorites like Monster Mash, big deal. But we'll also be focusing on songs like, I gave examples, I sent out a Yahoo blast today. Think of like Dead Man's Curve, okay, from Nash the Slash, or Jan and Dean, but we have the Nash the Slash version. Ha Ha, You're Dead by Green Day. Somebody suggested the Norman Greenbaum song, Spirit in the Sky, you know, Where I'm Gonna Go When I Die, but the only thing is we kept using that for our cemetery hunts all summer, so I really think we should, we've done that one to death, so we don't want to do that again, but think of those lines, people, if you have songs that have dead or death, something pretty predominant in the theme or the title of the song, send it to us so we can download it, so we'll have, you know, we'll be able to interject these songs and play them and celebrate Halloween. And also we'll be giving away, you know, T-shirts, one of my books. We're going to do Haunted Trivia live in the bar, which will be fun. We'll just call out the question, see if someone can answer it, and then win my book. If no one answers it, they don't get my book that night. Oh, well. And you know what? I'll be there to sign the book, too. So if you've already bought the book at Barnes & Noble or something, show up that night, October 15th from 7 to 9 at the Town Tavern in Chatham. Bring Ghost Hunting New Jersey book with you if you bought it, and I'll sign it. What's wrong?
I was just thinking.
All by yourself? Did it hurt?
Well, you know, someone's got to think around here between two of us, you know.
Yeah. Why? What were you thinking?
No, I was just thinking Wednesday night. Okay, what do I got to set on the DVD recorder?
The DVR or whatever? Well, it's Wednesday night is Ghost Hunters, right, on Sci-Fi? Yeah, well, no big loss there. Bones, I think, on Fox.
Nope, don't watch it.
Oh, it's good. David Boreanaz is hot.
I'm just disappointed.
But he's married.
I don't see Reaper coming back.
Yeah, I saw that too. It really got canned. What a sin, because that was a fun show. I really liked it. But getting back to our Halloween show, so that's the deal. If you can think up songs and you want to send them to us, we will have them prepared to play that night. And it'd be great to see people, you know, some of, like, I know last year we had fun, Elaine and her husband. Did her husband come out with her or just Elaine? I can't remember. Well, she came out, definitely. Dina was there. So, you know, and we've got at least Chatham puts us a little further down in the state. So instead of coming all the way out to Hagerstown, we'll be more, and it's right there between 78, the Parkway, and Route 24. So at 287, they all roads lead to Chatham. So it'll be very easy for people to get here and come out and party with us that night. And even though we'll be recording from 7 to 9, once, you know, we're done, we'll still be hanging out. So, you know, please make sure you come out and party with us and enjoy the holiday stuff. And obviously we'll be passing out bumper stickers to people, and we'll do Haunted Trivia Live to win a t-shirt, and it'll be fun. So we had a good time last year at the Laughing Lion. Mm-hmm. And the
good food.
Yeah, and they had good food, and I know the Town Tavern has very good food, so awesome. All right, so make sure you note that down. October 15th, Wednesday night from 7 to 9 in Chatham. And we have the details on the homepage of the NJGHS site, on deadline page, on my presentations page. You can't miss it. Anyway, did I tell you what I read yesterday? In an entire day, I read a whole book.
Well, that's just called pitiful.
Why?
A whole day?
Well, I didn't spend the whole day. I took breaks to do other things like in life.
Okay, you know,
like
see.
I did dishes, took out garbage, scooped cat litter, made the bed, vacuumed, blah, 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 blah. But I also went, and towards the end, I even said, you know, it was getting sunny and beautiful out. I'm like, I got to get out in the sunlight. I can't just sit here all day with this book. I actually took the book with me. I drove to the cemetery, and I'm reading this scary book while walking. So I got my exercise in walking in the cemetery and finishing this book. This book, I know you people can't see it, but even the cover is really, like, creepy. It's called The Uninvited. It's by Stephen LaChance. Let me tell you, it's the true story of the Union Screaming House. It's in Union, Missouri, which is just outside of St. Louis. Wow. You can knock this book out in a day, just sitting there, and you don't want to stop. You're just like, well, what happens next? What happens next? Oh, my God. And every time you think this is as crappy and horrible and scary as it can get, it gets more scary. So let me tell you, when this man comes on our show, I am so honored. I'm going to probably be, like, starstruck. It's going to be difficult for me to maintain composure and interview him because I just have such a high respect for him now after reading what he has gone through. And I can't recommend the book enough. I ordered it from barnesandnoble.com, and I could just shoot myself because yesterday I'm looking at it, and it's got the Llewellyn Moon. It's published by Llewellyn Publishing, where I could have purchased it for 50 to 55% off because I still have my account with them. Kill me. But anyway, I don't regret it, because the book is great. The story's great. I know they did this on a haunting on the Discovery Channel. They did a whole episode on it and reenacted a lot of it, you know, within an hour,
right,
you know.
Right.
But so reading the book, obviously you get even more of what went on behind the scenes and in the story. But really, really good. I'm leaving it here with Brian. I told him I want you to read it before we speak with Stephen LaShawn, so you're well versed on it as well, because it's really good.
Yeah, we'll see what I can get to.
Yeah, and it'll fit on the back of your toilet too.
I know.
Yeah,
see? Right around on top of yours.
Yep. It's a male thing with this whole reading room, you know. Like, women are just like, I don't have time. You just go in, do what you got to do, and get out. But men are just like, I gotta take the paper, you know. And like, jeez, Louise.
Well, sometimes we're in there a little while.
How? I mean, it's just
what?
Never mind. So
this
in any event,
it's called the deadline, not the butt line.
Yeah, right. But. So get the book, The Uninvited by Stephen LaChance. You will not be disappointed, and he will be on our show. It's, I think, the first Friday upload in November, if I remember correctly. But I think I do get to that in the end of the show. I'll definitely remind everyone. I know we're recording his interview on October 21st, so I was telling people to make sure if you have questions for him, if you've read his book and you want to say something to him, make sure you email the deadline at njghs.net prior to October 21st. And that way, when we interview him on the 21st, you'll be able to ask him questions. Yeah, he's going to be on the show. His show will upload November 7th, but we're going to interview him on the 21st of October. So anyway, make sure you check it out. It's called The Uninvited. It's published by Llewellyn Publishing, and it's by Stephen LaChance. And we'll be right back after this break.
I say, Sean B., I've been thinking about all the things necessary to produce a proper paranormal broadcast.
Do tell, Nathan S., what are these vital qualities?
Empathy, commitment, quiet dignity, and self-respect.
Indeed! What a shame we don't have any of those traits!
Oh yeah, the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show is rocking its way on the supernatural scene.
It's drive time paranormal broadcasting without the driving or the timing. Just go to www.ghostanddemon.com.
Think you know what goes bump in the night? You ain't heard nothing yet.
Each week we'll be bringing you the best and the worst kept secrets in the paranormal community.
Yeah, us, the Ghostman and Demon Hunter, Sunday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
www.ghostanddemon.com. The Ghostman and Demon Hunter show is beyond the normal broadcast.
Do you have what it takes to be a ghost hunter? Are you fascinated with the paranormal? Then why not take your interest to the next level and join the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society? For a $20 lifetime membership fee, you'll receive training on our cemetery hunts, get to participate on investigative teams for private investigations, and receive discounts on books we sell. Members also get the reduced rate on special events we offer throughout the year. You can PayPal right from the homepage of www.njghs.net or send your check or money order payable to Ghost Hunters to P.O. Box 8018, Parsippany, New Jersey, 07054. Happy haunting.
Hey, welcome back. It's time to go over our meeting announcements. Now, the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society has two meetings every month. They are free and open to the public to attend. We always have a share and scare segment, so if you have any questionable photographs or recordings, feel free to bring them to our meetings and have them reviewed during share and scare. First meeting that's going to take place is on October 21st. That's the North Jersey Division. That takes place at 293 Main Street in Hackettstown. It's the Community Center's Blue Room. Team leader Dina Chirico heads that up. Meeting time is from 6:30 to 8 p.m. It's always the third Tuesday of every month, 6:30 to 8 p.m., October 21st. Central Jersey Division is always the first Wednesday of every month, so the next one will be November 5th. Team leaders Gregory and Sherry Irish head up this division, and their meeting is held in the Hazlitt Library, which is located at 251 Middle Road in Hazlitt, and their meeting runs from 7 to 8:30 p.m. These meeting times, dates, and places, and MapQuest links and everything are right on the homepage of njghs.net. So check it out. Now, we're going to move along to Parashare. Do you have a paranormal experience or ghost encounter to tell? Excuse me. Then send it in an email to thedeadline@njghs.net. For each Parashare you submit and we read on the show, you'll receive one credit. You may use your credits to receive membership in the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society, only one credit necessary. Or you may cash in 10 credits for Natal Chart. That's a $75 value. It's an astrological blueprint of your birth date, time, and place, done by yours truly. We'll keep track of the Parashares and let you know when you hit 10, and then you can send me your birth date, time, and place, and I will send you a full-color natal chart and printout with my handwritten notes. Now this week, instead of Parashare, we're going to cut over to a wonderful interview with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Hey, welcome back to The Deadline. Of course, I'm here with Brian Sant, and we have a special guest tonight. Instead of doing Parashare, we have Rosemary Ellen Guiley, author of the Encyclopedia of Ghost Spirits, all kinds of things, right, Rosemary? Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Laura. It's really nice to be back with you. It's been a while.
I know. I can't remember the last... when was the last time I even saw you? Was that like in 2006?
Probably so, but, you know, our paths cross in many ways, and you and I are working on the same thing. Now we're working for the same publisher, which is great.
Yeah.
Doing these haunted road trip books.
I know. I love it. Yeah, that's right. That's the last time I saw you. It was 2007 when Bonnie surprised me when you and Carl showed up for the New Jersey Paranormal Investigators Coalition meeting.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, and that's when you inspired me. You said, go for it, write the book. And I thought, my God, but 6 months, you know? But it worked. It's here. It manifested.
Well, it came out great, and I hope it does really well for you.
Oh, thanks. Well, you know, your books are like, that was great. I had more fun writing the questions for tonight's interview because I got to take out all my Rosemary Ellen Guiley books. And then, of course, it was a walk down memory lane because I'm looking at, oh, she signed this one. She signed that one. I have her picture in this one. It's like amazing. And the amount of work that you've put into those just, and I... when I looked at your bibliography for the one book, the Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits and so forth, I sat there going, her bibliography is longer than my entire book in and of itself.
Well, it takes me just about two to three years to do an encyclopedia, and that's the first edition. And I do consult literally hundreds of texts. And I don't even list them all unless I've made, you know, some sort of significant use of them. And then if I revise, and the Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits is now in its third edition, each new edition takes me about a year to add new material to. So quite a bit of work does go into these. And the Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits, that's my bestseller encyclopedia. It's got so much material in it now, the publisher had to go to a thinner paper for the new edition just to keep the size from being too massive.
Wow.
And I'm joking that, you know, the next edition will have to go to Bible paper. You know? It would just be so much.
Oh, my. Yeah, but it's such an amazing reference. In fact, I was reading online somewhere, I don't know if you're familiar with the show on the CW network, Supernatural.
I am. I have seen some episodes of it. I don't get to follow it regularly. I'm on the road so much that it's hard for me to keep up with TV.
Yeah, no, I hear that.
It's a great show, though. Well done.
Well, they actually, when I was reading online, they actually use your books, your encyclopedias, as their one of their chief sources of reference to put the scripts together and to, you know, verify different things. I know when they were using, they made the reference to, what's that? That kind of weird entity that kind of, it was like a cannibal and it was once human and stays out in the woods and kind of starved to death and becomes a cannibal and gets real tall and gross looking. What's the name of that?
Wendigo?
No, that's the kind of werewolfy thing. Yeah, maybe it is a Wendigo. Yes. Yes, that's right. And
Wendigos are cannibalistic spirits that do live in the woods.
Right, that's what it was. And they had that, and I remember them saying that was specifically that episode they had referenced your, was it Werewolves and Vampires book, your encyclopedia?
Yes, there is an entry in that book. I'm really honored that shows use my books as references, and I know that I have served as an information source for The X-Files, for Charmed, for movies like The Cell, and probably countless other script writers. They're just really good repositories of information that can spin off endless ideas for people.
Yeah, and it makes me happy, too, to know they're doing their homework. They're not just making crap up as they go along and putting it on TV, because let's face it, most people sit there like just mesmerized by television thinking, well, if it's on TV, it's real, you know. It's like,
well, of course, with TV, we do have to expect a lot of embellishment, you know,
right,
for the sake of drama. But at least the basic ideas and the concepts are drawn from fact, you know, from our mythology and folklore.
Right. That's great. Hey, you know, so I do watch Supernatural faithfully every week. I record it. I buy the series when they come out for the previous season. So I'm a huge fan of the show. And now they've introduced in this is season 4, and the one character, Dean, was made a bargain in order from the other previous season to have his brother brought back to life. He bargained, but he was only given a year to live, and then his soul was taken from him, and he was put down in hell. And apparently this angel has come along and raised him from perdition, as he says, and even left like a burnt handprint mark on Dean's one shoulder to kind of grab him and pull him out of hell and bring him back to life. And the angel's name that they're using on the show is Castiel. And I looked up in your Encyclopedia of Angels book to see what I could find, and the closest I found was Cassiel. And I was wondering what you could tell us about this angel.
Well, there do seem to be some similarities between the two. And I'm assuming that the show is using an original name so that they're not required to follow angel lore. You know, they got a lot of freedom. But one thing we do know from angel lore is that angel names have a lot of variations of spelling. And I may not have even found all of the variations of Cassiel, who is a documented angel from Christian and angelology going, you know, way back to ancient times. Cassiel is an angel who was supposed to be a member of the Powers, and the Powers is one of the hierarchies of angels. There are an unknown number of hierarchies. Traditionally, we think of 9 because that's the system that's been most accepted, but there have been other systems that have named 10 and 12 orders of angels. These would be ranks of angels with specific characteristics, abilities, and duties. Mm. The Powers are really important angels because they battle evil on Earth.
Ah,
and
so that
so they
is
have to
similar.
Be really fierce.
Really?
And in fact, we find this in angel lore, throughout angel lore, that angels are not fluffy, do-gooding, nice guys. They're really fierce because they have to be in order to battle evil, no matter what order they're in. They've got to be tough guys. And sometimes, you know, the stories go from even biblical times that they have to be tough on people, too. So they are dispatched to deal in situations where they must confront evil. And the Powers would be like, I guess you could consider them like the hit squad of the angels.
Ah. So, and Cassiel, I think I was reading in your book, was associated with the day of the week, Saturday?
Yes, Saturday, and he's also considered the angel of time. Now, in various systems of angelology, angels all have specific duties. They're assigned to the days of the week, the months of the year, even the hours of the day, to levels of heaven. And again, there are different systems with different levels of heaven. And Cassiel is supposed to be associated with the planet Saturn, who also right. rules time. So he's got that time element. And the seventh heaven. The seventh heaven would be one of the highest and best in angel lore. And so, you know, he's considered a prince, which would be a high-ranking angel, and has these duties to govern time. So if you wanted to invoke Cassiel, for example, specifically for a certain purpose, the best time to do it would be his day, which would be Saturday.
Okay. Wow. You know, and this is making a lot of sense just with the most recent episode, because in the show, Cassiel shows up to Dean and tells him to make it stop. And Dean wakes up, he thought he was having a dream, and he thought it was a dream. He woke up, he was on a park bench, and the cop woke him up, said, you know, move along, you can't be sleeping here. And he goes into a diner, and he ends up sitting next to who's going to be his father. It's already gone back in time, it's 1973, and next thing you know, he sees his father. His father's going to go buy this Volkswagen bus. He talks him into getting the Chevy Impala, which he ends up inheriting when his father leaves it to him. And it was just, you know, he finally finds Cassiel around the corner, and he says, you know, what is the deal? I didn't notice you had any DeLoreans, you know, making a reference to Back to the Future. And the angel says to him, you know, time is fluid, and sometimes we can bend it, you know. And he goes, you have to make it stop. He's referring to this whole thing that's going to transpire with his younger brother inheriting, like, the demon blood or whatever. It's a whole deal that his mother ends up making in order to bring John, who's going to be his father, back to life. And so it's, but that really, what you're telling me about Cassiel, it seems like they really did base this angel on him. And even in the show, Cassiel even mentions about, you know, if you don't fix it, we will. And he was kind of like making the point of, you really should do it yourself, because we are pretty fierce, is what he was getting at. And he was even saying, you know, we're warriors in God's army. We're not really, like you were saying, these fluffy white winged things.
Right. So. I don't doubt, you know, that angels have loving, benevolent qualities. Of course they do, because, you know, they're very helpful to people when their help is sought. But I think we really do need to think of them as warriors too, and mm-hmm. very well armored in the battle against evil. The whole lesson on time is so important too, because our concept of time is very rigid. And I think that you know, when you start having paranormal experiences, you realize that you're kind of stepping outside of this rigid idea of time, to where time is more fluid, to where the past, present, and the future start to lose those definitions.
Hmm.
So we get into this, what seems like a fantasy land, which actually I think is just another reality, where we can reshape things. We can reshape things that might have been in our past. We can influence things that in our linear time would be part of our future. It's a mastery of time, and Cassiel would be one of the angels to seek help in mastering time. Mastery of time in order to optimize our own life journey.
Wow. You know, that is something you just sit here and, like, be talking about all day to try and wrap your head around it, because it's true. I think the way we quantify time is completely man-made, to come up with the fact that, well, there's going to be 24 hours in a day, there's going to be so many days in a month, and, you know, it really is more of a man-made thing versus how I think you're saying, is that it is kind of running kind of concurrent, and you can kind of cross from one stream to the next in terms of time.
I think it helps us get through our physical reality. We need some sort of structure in order for this reality to hang together.
Hmm.
But I think that our concepts of reality are shifting and expanding, and the more that happens, and it happens on a larger scale, we're probably going to see time itself change. And the human beings of the future, maybe the far future, will be living very differently than we live now, and may even have what we would consider to be supernatural powers. We just haven't learned how to develop them and make use of them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I can see that. You know, and then I have to say, I'm not to keep drilling this show to death, but on the same show, Supernatural, the last season ended, you know, it was the season finale, and it was where the demon Lilith, you know, like this, and she was embodied in the body of a little girl who comes in very cute and sweet, but it was actually this demon Lilith, who basically can wipe out entire towns of people in one shot, but she couldn't conquer Sam, who's Dean's younger brother. And like I was saying, he was marked with the yellow-eyed demon's blood when he was a six-month-old baby, and that's what gave him these psychic powers. And when Lilith was ready to wipe him out, she put her hand up and was trying to send the energy his way to wipe him out, and it wouldn't work, and so she just vanished. So in your book, The Encyclopedia of Witches and Witchcraft, you detail Lilith. There's part that I knew that she was really the first wife of Adam, and she wanted to be his equal. But you go into more detail explaining her curse from the angels since she refused to return to Adam and how this made her a demon. So I was wondering if you could explain that for the listeners.
Sure. There are a lot of different legends about Lilith, and some of them actually do contradict each other. Mm-hmm. But we can say, bottom line, she is one of the fiercest, malevolent entities in demonology and even angelology, because she crosses both of those. She is one nasty piece of work. And the dominant story about her is that she was Adam's first wife. And she wanted to be his equal, and she was rebuffed in that. And so she left. She was angry, and she left Adam, and she spoke the ineffable name of God, that is, the name which cannot be spoken, and that it has a magical quality to it, which invokes all kinds of powers, powers that probably Lilith shouldn't have had access to. So God took remedial action and sent three angels off to deal with her, and their names all start with S's.
Right.
And I'm going to guess on the pronunciation here. There's Sanvi, Sansanvi, and Smengeloth. And I'm not sure with the last one exactly where you put the emphasis. A lot of these angel names sound almost nonsensical. It's more of a rhythm of sounds.
Mm.
But anyway, it was their job to basically corral her. And they found her in the Red Sea. They threatened her loss of her children, because she was creating demon children from it started with the seed of Adam, and she would go out and take nocturnal emissions from men at night and create these demon children, which would then prey upon men, on newborns, on mothers who had just given who had just had birth.
Right.
And she was very difficult to deal with, very powerful. She finally arrived at a truce with these angels that she would be allowed to have her own domain and do her thing, which was revenge against humanity. But if ever she saw the names of any one of these three angels, she would be required to leave people alone. And that's it's a story that explains how amulets work, how charms work. The names of these three angels are written down on parchment and put over, for example, the beds of newborn infants to protect them from visits by either Lilith or her demon children.
Wow. Now, wasn't there some other part of the deal where 100 of her children would die each day, so that's why she was always on this mission to really procreate at a hefty rate?
That's what the angels threatened her with. That,
oh, okay.
They said, look, you know, you got to go back to Adam, or, you know, we're going to kill off 100 of your children every day. And she refused. Now, she suffered punishment for that. But she was able to work out kind of this, like, compromise.
Wow.
Her demon children are said to be out attacking people at night, too. It's one explanation for infant death syndrome, you know, children dying
right
suddenly, or mothers who have just given birth to die they're supposedly visited by these demonic hordes at night that suck off their life force in a vampiric sort of way.
Wow.
But there are many, many stories about Lilith, and she is quite complicated. She's one of those complicated entities. Wouldn't you figure that it would be a woman, right? A female who would have the most power, be the fiercest, one of the most dangerous in all of mythology. There's another story, too, that she became the bride of Samael, who is equated with the devil.
Right.
And that further reinforces her demonic aspect, her malevolent aspect.
Yeah, you know, I was reading that in your book, Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits, and it says, you know, Lilith, she and her spouse, the devil, you know, they were the parent of the jinn demons, which I guess are like genies or fire elementals.
The jinn, yes, come out of Arabic mythology and were absorbed into Islam. They're like demons, but they're not quite demons. They're malevolent, they're tricky, some of them are quite dangerous. In mythology, they were originally the first inhabitants of Earth, unlike the demons of Christianity who fall from heaven. They were originally angels who fell. The jinn were originally the inhabitants of the Earth and got pushed out when God created human beings. And in mythology, the jinn want our world back, and that's why they're malevolent and dangerous.
Okay, yeah, because we did a show a while back, too, mentioning the jinn that we covered them, and that they were actually somebody on eBay was eBaying a genie and explaining all about the jinn and how you could get this little, what was it, like a scarab-encoded trinket that carried the jinn inside of it, and that it was very powerful and blah, 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 blah. But,
And there are good jinn, you know, like there are angels, but, you know, the fairy tales of, you know, the three wishes of the genie,
right,
actually have a parallel to the devil's pact, because the wishes, and it's true in all these stories, when the genie is found and offers the wishes never come out right.
Right.
And then there is always a price to be paid at the end. And that's the equivalent of a devil's pact, you know, getting what you want in exchange for giving something over to the devil, which in the devil's pact, it's usually your soul.
Right.
And the jinn are made out of fire. The Quran says they're made out of smokeless fire, mm-hmm. which in modern terms could be interpreted as plasma.
Oh, really? Wow, I never thought of that. Very cool. So, I got to ask you, and I know this is really not an easy way to lead into this, but so what makes, you know, we've all read about ghouls. I don't know if you ever remember that movie, Mr. Sardonicus. And in the movie Mr. Sardonicus, he explains like what a ghoul is, you know, and how he had to actually become one in order to dig up his dead father-in-law's body to get the lottery ticket, the winning lottery ticket, out of his vest that he was buried in. And when he opens, in the movie, it's really cool, when he opens the casket in order to, the moonlight hits right on his decaying father-in-law's face. And you can see, like, the lips are all decayed away and the teeth are all to the fore and very horrible looking. The guy gets sickened by it, but he makes himself go back and he gets the ticket and he goes home. By the time he gets home to his wife, she's like, "What's wrong with you? Why won't you talk to me?" And when she lights a candle, he has that same sardonic grin on his face. His teeth are all showing, his mouth is frozen shut like that. But so he goes on throughout the movie to explain what a ghoul is, and I was wondering if you could explain, you know, what makes a human corpse rise from its dead state, because in the movie he makes it sound like it's just someone who goes to the cemetery to prey upon the dead and to kind of loot their belongings. That's what he equates to being a ghoul. But I've noticed in your book it kind of says it's someone coming from a, like a human becomes one who's a dead human. So can you explain that?
Yes, you know, and here again in mythology, Laura, there are different legends and explanations, and, you know, sometimes they contradict each other. I haven't come across that particular explanation from mythology, but, you know, it could definitely be out there. A ghoul usually, ghoul, again, comes out of Arabic mythology, same as the jinn, and it's in most cases, a demonic entity, like an evil djinn that loves to haunt graveyards, and it feeds off corpses, and it's also a djinn of the desert. The desert is considered a very dangerous place, especially for travelers, so beings that haunt the desert would be particularly malevolent.
Wow.
Lonely places. But there is also the tradition that ghouls can arise from dead people as well, that certain people who don't make it to the afterlife can rise up out of their graves in this staggeringly horrific, rotting corpse kind of appearance.
Ugh.
and prey upon people in a cannibalistic sort of way, you know, whoever they would happen to fall upon. And people like that in all mythologies, including the ghouls, people who have those kinds of fates are often suicides. They've been murder victims. They may have died of an epidemic. They may have been cursed when they died. There's
wow.
something unholy or unsettling about the way they leave the physical world, and their spirit is corrupted or tainted or just downright unlucky. And so bad things happen. They don't make it to the afterlife. They can become a ghoul. They might become a vampire or a wraith, you know, a wandering spirit. Some sort of corrupted form that then in turn becomes a problem for the living.
See, that is, you know, it's bad enough if you're going to get vampired, but at least, you know, if the guy is good looking, but if a rotting corpse, that would be my luck. That would be my luck, even in the afterlife, you know.
And the ghouls, so one thing about the ghouls is that they're cannibalistic, too. It's not just the blood. They will feed off flesh. And I found stories of ghouls feeding on corpses, you know, that they would rob graves and consume rotting flesh. So they have a similarity to night terror demons like Lilith and the Lamiae of Greek mythology, the childbirth demons in that particular pantheon, because they attack the living and feed off the life force. They suck up blood. They suck off the vitality.
Now, are those
many kinds of demons and spirits in these particular categories.
Oh, okay. Now, that was when you say they suck up the life, because I can't remember where I was reading it. I think it was your one, which book of yours, but something about they attach to, like, the navel or something of a newborn in order to draw out the life force?
Yes, the navel would be a way in. Some of them, particularly like the entrails, that they will enter through the abdomen, and then they either pluck out the intestines or they suck out the energy from the intestines.
Wow. Wow. Ew. Oh, geez. So, Rosemary, you're writing the next installment for the America's Haunted Road Trip series that's due out, I guess your book's due out this time next year, Ghost Hunting Pennsylvania. And I had to ask you, like, besides the obvious, everybody knows Gettysburg is haunted. What's the next best haunted place to visit in PA?
It's probably another one of the obvious, Laura, but truly does have such a variety of phenomena, and that's Fort Mifflin. Right outside of Philadelphia.
Brian's shaking his head in accordance. He loves that place.
Oh, I tell you, you know, I've been there several times. I've done all nights there. And there's apparitions. There's full-bodied apparitions, incredible EVP that you can get in the fort. You can see things walking around in the yard.
Wow.
I would say for one single place, it's got a variety, and of course the history there is so fascinating,
mm-hmm.
and some of the casements and the cell blocks, the bunk areas, they have some pretty spooky feels to them, and I think there's even a portal there in one of them. There's a place in one of the bunk areas where people feel that entities come and go from other dimensions.
Oh, wow. You didn't tell me about that, Brian. Yeah, that's where we had a really good EVP that Michael Bowser sent me. He's from Maryland, and he sent that to me, and we played it on the show that he got while pulling an all-nighter recently at, I believe it was September 5th, he was there at Fort Mifflin. And the EVP is, it's so clear you really think it's a human and that they're trying to pull our leg, because it says, "That's me." And there's even an echo to it, but it's, I believe him. You know, he said, no, the guy captured it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've also gotten some incredible photographs and EVP at Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia. I'm now pushing out into some outer, you know, some further out areas and also smaller venues. Next month I'll be doing an all night at the Jean Bonnet Tavern, which I have read about, have not been to yet.
Are you kidding? Like the Jean Bonnet, the little girl who was murdered, they've named a tavern after her?
No, this actually was named after somebody in the Revolutionary War. It's of you know, French, a man's name, Jean.
Oh, okay.
And Bonnet, B-O-N-N-E-T, I believe, is the way it's spelled.
Right.
But it's a revolutionary era, Revolutionary War era place that has a lot of activity in it, and it's not too far out of Pittsburgh.
Oh, all right. That's a schlep from where we are here on the East Coast. That's a drive, yeah. Brian Sane's like 4 hours from here. So, wow. Oh, that's going to be good.
Pennsylvania has a lot going in it. There's an area called I think it's Black Forest, where a lot of activity has been documented. You know, there are a lot of Bigfoot places and haunted bed and breakfast, opera houses. Lancaster has a lot of activity in it, some of the older buildings in town.
Wow. Yeah, that's right. That's now, does Rick Fisher still have his Pennsylvania Paranormal Society or something going on?
Yes. Rick Fisher does conduct like day trips to a lot of places. I did a day's trip to Lancaster with him a while ago and learned about a lot there. Chickies Rock also is near Columbia and Marietta, another interesting place. There are a lot of places outdoors that can be counted on the most haunted list.
Wow.
Chickies Rock is a big cliff overlooking the Columbia River, and people have fallen off it, been pushed off it, committed suicide off it, and there are a lot of ghosts wandering around, as well as little spirits called the Apple Witches who live in the trees and supposedly come down from the trees and steal people's food if they're having a picnic lunch.
Yeah, that would be my luck, too. If it's not the ants, it would be apple witches. Well, Rosemary, thank you so much. I was going to say, where can we see you next? Are you got any shows? Because I know the Halloween season's coming up, so you must be on some of the channels, you know, whether it's Travel Channel, Discovery, and or any conventions or anything that you got going on?
Quite a variety, and in fact, some of my shows are already showing up on cable, Salem Witches on the Travel Channel, Angels on the History, Vampires on A&E, Children of the Grave on Sci-Fi. We've got The Possessed coming out now from the Booth Brothers about possession cases on DVD. I will be on Coast to Coast with George Norrie on October 30th, doing our annual Halloween thing together. This is college month for me, too. I'm out in the colleges quite a bit. And I also have my own presentation, a one-woman show in Las Vegas.
Really?
October 18th. The Las Vegas Library System has sponsored me for a paranormal event. I'm very excited about that.
Oh, that's awesome.
I can now say I did Las Vegas.
There you go. Atta girl. That's great. That is so cool. And Rosemary, so if people want to, you know, check you, I know you're on MySpace, and if people go to the NJGHS MySpace page, they would see your picture. You're in my top friends there, and they can get to your MySpace page from there. But what's your regular website? Is it visionaryliving.com?
Yes, it is. www.visionaryliving.com. And I've got a calendar and blog, and just had the website redesigned. I've got a whole new look, some new photos, and invite people to stop by. And also sign up for, this is a new feature on my website, a free newsletter. Just need your email address. There's a little box that people can enter that. It's just to be on my mailing list to get occasional notices of special events and, you know, new releases on film and in books.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I'll have to sign up because that's always good to know where you're going to be. And that's wonderful. Yeah, I'll have to take a look at the site because I've seen your MySpace page. Oh, and your pictures. My gosh. I don't know who the photographer is. I mean, obviously he had a good canvas to work with you, but they did an amazing job. They really came out great.
I was in Atlanta at the end of August for Dragon Con, and I had a day-long shoot with Valerie Smith, who's a pro photographer there. This is something that my manager, Jana Van Dyke, arranged for me, and the photos were just fabulous. She shot over, we had a whole day and, you know,
wow,
multiple outfit changes and backgrounds, and shot a lot of photographs, and I'm going to be releasing them, you know, periodically, just these different looks. I've been getting a lot of compliments on them. I highly recommend her, Valerie Smith.
Okay.
She's also on MySpace. You can find her on MySpace. And if you're in Atlanta or nearby, she is definitely the woman to see.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll definitely have to check her. Not that I could ever afford a photo shoot for an entire... Not that I don't even like my picture being taken, so there'd be no way they'd hem me in for a whole day.
I think you'd come out looking gorgeous, Laura.
I don't know. I just couldn't do it. Just to get the picture taken for the book was... You know, I settled down to like five. My friend took the pictures of me. I sent five of them to the publisher, and I was just praying to God. I'm like, please, please just pick one because I can't go through this again.
Well, I didn't realize how hard it is to do a photo shoot. I have a whole new appreciation for models now. You don't just stand there. You know, you got to work it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to have all these different expressions and postures and...
Yeah,
you know,
and yeah, it's
the
funny.
Makeup, the clothes.
People don't realize when modeling kicks in, what looks really good in a photo typically feels very unnatural in person. The photographer knows what he's doing or what she's doing, and she may say, "No, tilt your head like this, but twist your body like that." Now, concoct your wrist like this, and you're standing there going, "Are you nuts?" And yet the picture gets taken, and it looks gorgeous, but it doesn't feel right when you're doing it. So that's where they're a pro, because they know to tell you to do those things.
That's very true. That I would have thought that things that would be off, that the postures that I had to be in, that I would have looked very stiff and even contrived, but it comes across natural.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they know what they're doing, but boy, it's a lot of hard work, and I was really beat at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I have some coming out with rats.
Ooh.
Closer to Halloween, I did two shoots with rats, an albino rat and a hairless rat.
Real live ones or just...
Live ones,
ooh.
Yeah. And they got sharp little claws, but the rats were climbing over me. I was sitting in a kind of a Victorian overstuffed chair trying to look very, you know, gothic. And the rats were climbing all over me, and then Valerie's trying to capture them in, you know, some great moment. Where both of us look good, the rat and me.
Wow. Oh, I give you credit. I couldn't have done it. I mean, and I have nothing against rats. I think they're cute. I've even married a couple, but I just wouldn't want them crawling on me.
Yeah, well, you don't want to wear your best clothing for the rats.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they discriminate as to what's a toilet and what's not, huh?
No, they don't.
Well, Rosemary, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us tonight. I really appreciate it. It's been an awesome interview. I know people are going to be talking about this for weeks to come, so I'm very thankful. It's going to upload on October 6th, so if you check out our deadline page that day, you can get the link from there. October 10th? October 10th it's going to upload. Forgive me. That's why Brian's here.
I will post it on my calendar so people can download. Thank you so much,
Laura.
Oh,
great.
Just such a pleasure talking with you again.
Yeah, you too. You take care. We'll talk soon, all right?
Okay.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
If you're ready to take your ghost hunting to the next level, you're ready to be a certified paranormal investigator by the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. The certification includes 4 hours of hands-on, concentrated training by the NJGHS leaders at the most haunted prison in the United States, Eastern State Penitentiary. located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To participate, you must have all of your own equipment. Register online at the NJGHS.net website certification page. Costs are $125 for current members and $145 for non-members of the NJGHS who will receive their membership going forward. PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa are accepted. Upon completion of the course, submission of your report of findings, and achieving a total point score of 80 or better, you will receive your certificate and new certified paranormal investigator card from the NJGHS. All the details are on the certification page of the NJGHS.net website. So what are you waiting for? Take your hobby seriously. Become a certified paranormal investigator. Now's your chance to take what should be your last ride and get out alive. Morbid Mobile Tours lets you climb in through the suicide door or end loader and head out to the infamous Shades of Death Road in Warren County. While you're seated in the very space where dead bodies took the ride to their final resting place, you'll hear the grim tales of ghosts, murder, and disease. Jezebel is a beautiful 1983 Cadillac hearse who served her time in funeral processions and now is dying to take you with her on this haunted trail. Tours are $25 per victim and depart from the Hackettstown train station. To book your tour, visit Morbid Mobile Tours page by clicking the license plate on the homepage of the NJGHS.net website. Morbid Mobile Tours, we're waiting to take you away.
Hi, I'm Kelly Weaver of the Spirit Society of Pennsylvania, and you're listening to the Deadline podcast of New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society.
Hey, it's time for Haunted Trivia. Now, last week's Haunted Trivia, you were asked, what is the name of the town where the Mexican Mummy Museum resides? And you were given bonus kudos if you gave the name of the museum, too.
Wait. Nobody even guessed. I'm psychic.
It pains me, you know. Especially after I've gotten feedback from people saying, oh, the questions are so easy. Now they don't even try.
Well, go back to easy ones.
Yeah, well, you want to know the answer?
Oh, why not?
The where the museum resides is in Guanajuato, Mexico. Okay, you like that better? Was that better? Guanajuato, Mexico. And for the bonus kudos, it was Museo de las Momias, which is Museum of Mummies. Okay, it's located, if you want to find it on the web, at www.mummytombs.com/mummy and blah, 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 blah. The link goes on and on. I'm not going to put it on the website because nobody even tried. So go to mummytombs.com and look for the Museum de las Momias, Museo de las Momias, and that's the Museum of Mummies in Guanajuato, Mexico. Okay?
Okay.
Sarai. In Russian lore, this is this week's Haunted Trivia. Now, this week's Haunted Trivia has a skill level of some thought required. In Russian lore, a man who incurs the wrath of the devil is punished by being transformed into a wolf and then sent among his family relations. He is doomed to be driven from village to village by the need for change. What is the name of this cursed creature? Be the first person to email the correct answer to hauntedtrivia@njghs.net, and you'll win one of our brand new NJGHS t-shirts. Woo! Okay, and remember, it's hauntedtrivia@njghs.net. If you send it to the deadline, even if you send the right answer, you don't win. And as usual, team leaders, Brian Sant in particular, and people who have won in the last 30 days are ineligible to win a prize.
Wow. I won everyone.
I know. So, As I mentioned before, we've got some really cool interviews coming up that we're going to be recording on October 21st. So if you have questions and comments for Patrick Burns of True TV's Haunting Evidence, or Stephen LaChance, the author of The Uninvited, and he also runs the Missouri Paranormal Research, make sure you get them in to us before October 21st, and that way you will hear Patrick Burns on October 24th upload, and you will hear Stephen LaChance on the November 7th upload. Of course, in between those two dates, we will have the Halloween upload on Friday, October 31st, which we are again recording next Wednesday after the show uploads, October 15th at the Town Tavern in Chatham, New Jersey. So, in the interim, too, you can also catch Haunting Evidence. It's on Saturdays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Check your local cable guide for your True TV network channel in your area. And if you get a chance, definitely stop by BarnesandNoble.com and pick up Stephen LaChance's book, The Uninvited. Okay, it's very cool. Anything else, Brian?
Nope, I think you pretty much covered it all.
Very good. All right. Well, thanks, Brian, the NJGHS technician and producer of
The Hail Deadline. To the King, baby.
Of course, our team leaders, Gregory and Sherry Irish and Dina Trico. And of course, thanks to all of you for listening. Keep downloading the shows weekly, because at some point in life, you have to meet the deadline.